Developing Your People, Common Sense Leadership in the Workplace, Volume 3, Career Asset Management, Teamwork, and Empowerment, written by Harry T. Roman, narrated by Kat Lukabaugh. Introduction. There is no greater responsibility in the workplace than being a leader or manager in charge of developing employees, for you will shape their careers and help them realize their dreams. In this 3-volume audiobook series, we explore common sense ways to guide employees as they grow. This information is based on 36-plus years in business, managing and leading employees, as well as leading numerous interdisciplinary project teams. Often I derive this wisdom from fellow IEEE members who have served as my bosses, coworkers, and longtime friends. In passing these insights along to you, I hope you derive as much pleasure and satisfaction from them as I have experienced doing them. The volumes in this trilogy are Volume 1, Key Skills Employees Will Need, Volume 2, Employee Development Strategies. Volume 3, Career Asset Management, Teamwork, and Empowerment. Enjoy listening to Volume 3, now playing. Volumes 1 and 2 are already available. Harry T. Roman. Career Asset Management. Companies today have experienced downsizing and many corporate reorganizations due to the global competition and competitiveness in the information age. We hear much discussion about putting the right people in the right places within an organization and achieving a team-based approach to problem solving. We also hear quite a bit about how employees must take charge of their career development, being mindful that their ultimate destiny depends upon themselves, not their companies. Employee responsibility for career development is a real change from what happened 30 years ago in American industry. Talking about it is one thing, but actually expecting your staff to respond to it is quite another. These days, senior management does desire to make their employees responsible for a good portion of their professional development needs. They reason that the salaries they are paying cover not only what their employees are doing, but also help them to be prepared to meet the job's future challenges. So, on top of the normal continuing education that an employee needs or receives for the regular conduct of work-related activities, managers need to teach employees how best to prepare for their futures. Being prepared for your future career progression is referred to as career asset management. Since your career is your earning power for paying back your debts and financing your retirement, it is perfectly logical to think of it as an asset. Humans protect their worldly assets, their houses, their families. Why not protect their earning power and their careers? With many companies cutting back their human relations and employee development departments, training budgets tend to be very localized and somewhat reduced in size and scope from what they once were. More responsibility falls on the shoulders of departmental managers and their staffs. It is up to employees and managers to talk about and perhaps plan for employees' futures, but the bulk of the responsibility rests with the employees. The best thing managers can do is teach the employees a logical and worthwhile process they can use to prepare for their career future, because the future may not be with the company they are now working for. Experts believe many employees will actually have 3 to 4 jobs during their working careers. The process of identifying, assessing, and planning an overall career direction becomes an important personal exercise for all employees. This section uses excerpted information from IEEE's Career Asset Management CAM tool, which I helped develop. It is a 7-step process for disciplining users to ask the right questions, to develop plans for where they want their careers to go, and how to map out a strategy for getting there. It is an excellent computer-based program you can use with your employees. This tool is pure process. The real work begins when employees sit down and start to ask serious questions about where they want to go with their careers. As their leader, you must motivate them to think about their futures and be ready to ask the tough questions. Growth is always a series of tough choices, and CAM is a great way to make those choices within a logical, concise, and user-friendly framework. Your employees must first understand that their personal goals drive their careers. No universal answers or quick remedies for career growth will magically appear. The whole process starts with an honest assessment of what they want to do with their careers and their lives. Anyone can change their career at any time. The choice is theirs to make. CAM is a process that helps you ask the right questions. Teach your employees to take the time to ask the important and comprehensive questions because, as Henry David Thoreau said, in the long run, you only hit what you aim at. Now, taking all of this information into consideration, here are the 7 steps in the CAM process. 1. Research career opportunities. 2. Identify and define personal career goals. 3. Do self-assessment. 4. Analyze gap. 5. Develop plan and identify actions. 6. Implement plan. And 7. Reevaluate and reassess. Steps 1 and 2 set the tone for a career. Steps 3, 4, and 5 involve active career planning. Steps 6 and 7 are concerned with the plan's implementation. Now, as a basic guide, let's take a brief look at what goes on in each of these steps. In the following discussion, I shall use the pronoun you to mean both you and your collective group of employees, because it is my hope in this section to get you, their leaders and managers, thinking about your careers as well. It is through a motivated you that they will see the virtues of carefully monitoring and periodically assessing the goals and directions of their own careers. 1. Research other career opportunities. Have you taken the time to think very basically about your career? Where do you want to work? Who do you want to work for? What things interest you? Where are the hot topics in your field today? What level and benefits are you seeking? Often we take these basic questions for granted, but they are fundamental to the career you are planning. There is much more competition for jobs today, and that competition comes in the form of what you want to do and what you can expect to be paid for doing it. It starts with basic questions about where you want to work and who you want to work for, because companies are managed differently. It's no different than when you took those first interviews for a job. You had to decide what you wanted to do with your life. It's no different when managing your career. Your wants and desires will change as you age, and different things will appeal to or alienate you at different times on the job. Take a fresh look every time you analyze your career, no matter how much it hurts. 2. Identify and define personal career goals. Now you must get to the point of envisioning what it is you want to do and where you want to be in the future. What kinds of things do you like to do? Where do you want to be in the next, say, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? These are tough questions to ask indeed. Has there been a trend to your career that you want to continue? Or are you going to strike out in a new direction? Are you satisfied with the traditional work you are doing? Or do you wish to pursue other avenues, perhaps management, for example? Many experienced workers in the industry have begun to think about starting their own businesses. Is this something that appeals to you? Are you the type of person that wants to tackle the consulting field? Is climbing the corporate ladder appealing to you? These direction-setting questions will lock you into a course of action. Consider them very carefully. 3. Do self-assessment. Looking inward at this step, you must identify and assess the skills and knowledge that you now possess, taking stock of the resources at your command. Here is where you establish the baseline for what you have already accumulated from your career and determine your current job satisfaction level. The best way to accomplish this accounting of professional assets and skills is to document major accomplishments so that you can conveniently refer to them. In many ways, this step is quite similar to writing a resume. You arrange your work and accomplishments in an orderly fashion so that a reviewer can look at what you have done and determine if you are a fit with their company. Here, you are both a resume writer and the reviewer. What have you done with your career up to now, and what do you offer? It's an honest self-assessment. And the more time you have taken to document your skills and accomplishments, the better prepared you are to move through this time-consuming step. A word of advice. Always document your achievements and major accomplishments. You will need to refer to them sooner than you think. If there is one way to accurately measure your growth, it is here. You are always judged by your accomplishments. 4. Analyze gap. You are now ready to confront and compare the present skills you have accumulated with the future skills you are going to need to meet your personal career goals you have considered in the previous steps. This step is critical because to do it accurately, you must do your homework to understand what attaining your future goals will require in skill levels. Further, once you understand these new levels, you must analyze the differences and determine how you are going to bridge the gap you are facing to make the transition. This step is tough, and it may diminish your spirit for the process somewhat, but it is absolutely essential for your career. It is much like the process you face at work. When your boss reviews your work for the year and then makes recommendations for changes that will improve your effectiveness. The difference is here. You are evaluating yourself and getting ready to determine what you require to move up to your next learning experience. 5. Develop plan and identify actions. Now you set a plan into place to make the transition you have defined. Develop a detailed plan of action for yourself, much like you would for an engineering project or launching a new product. Be specific about what it is you hope to accomplish and the milestones you want to achieve. Set all your steps down on paper and make a formal schedule. Measure your progress as you move through the plan. This document becomes your personal roadmap and is your baseline and defining document for your personal success. 6. Implement plan. Be relentless in pursuing the plan. Take the identified courses and educational curricula that you have defined as necessary to the attainment of your goals. Seek out the people, places, and sources of information you have specified as being important to furthering your career. Review the literature and stay on top of what is going on in the field. Stay connected with or join a professional affiliation and delve into the rich literature and networking relationships that professional associations have to offer. Make something happen at this stage. Be tenacious and stick to your commitments. Reward yourself when you have accomplished a major milestone. Always move forward. Be true to your goals. Stay the course. 7. Reevaluate and reassess. All plans need flexibility. Things change, assumptions become invalid, technology moves forward, and the playing field constantly evolves. Develop contingency plans for the possibility of changes midway through your plan. Monitor and assess industry shifts. Keep doing your homework. Reassess your personal growth and make sure your planned goals are still valid. Review these goals for relevance and, if necessary, modify them and continue your forward progress. Stay in touch with the industry and your personal needs. This step is the continuous improvement phase of your process. Return to step one as often as you need to and begin the process over again. CAM is not an easy process. It never is when you challenge the basic assumptions about who you are and what you want to do with your life. But after all, it is your life, and no one is better qualified to answer the questions than you. In the final analysis, CAM is a discipline for asking the right questions, and discipline is ultimately what separates the good performers from the mediocre ones. The key is to get the discipline early in your life. Use it to guide your career where you want it to go, not where the ebb and flow of a profession may take it. Here are some words from George Bernard Shaw to guide you. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get ahead in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, they make them. Make your own circumstances and opportunities by using the CAM process to carefully plan for them. Employees who can make the tough choices about their careers and personal growth are much more likely to be able to make the tough on-the-job decisions as well. Using a process like CAM also builds character. Help your employees understand CAM's logic and intent. And don't forget to use it yourself. Set the example. I can't resist one more quote a coworker was always fond of using. If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Watch those teams. People want to be recognized for their achievements. They will strive to be the best they can if their leaders trust them and the environment is conducive. Actually, running the race is a high achiever's addiction, with the outcome and any rewards being the icing on the cake. The race is the rush. Teams sometimes tend to average down high achievers, restraining their high energy and tremendous momentum. It is the high performers' can-do spirit that re-energizes today's evolving companies. Nailing high performers down to consensual formalities of a relatively slow-moving team can shackle your racehorses just when you need them the most. When carried too far, your racehorses will leave for greener pastures and your competitors' stables. There is one way to cure the problem. Put the racehorses in charge of the teams and let them set a fast pace. Unfortunately, all too often, just the opposite occurs. The racehorses are subdued, and that's why this section is important. If teams are to work to your company's benefit, they must be carefully monitored to make sure the high energy that will inspire them is not frittered away on formalities, endless discussions, and wrangling among team members. The composition and assignment of teams within companies does vary quite a bit. Teams can involve dedicated assignments of individuals for set periods of time. They can also be part of a matrix assignment along with an individual's other regular functions. From my own experience, I prefer the matrix style of assignment. It tends to give workers some variety, often allowing them to intellectually shift gears a bit between subject matter. Teams that have a tedious assignment, with the same old faces day in and day out, can quickly become stale if their leader does not maintain a proper working environment. Burnout can occur, and both the team and individuals suffer greatly, even to the extent of damaging future working relationships between team members. Professionals want to be involved in a learning environment. They expect mentoring with the opportunity to stretch out in new directions. Working on a team can give them the uneasy sense of being confined to only one backyard when they have an irresistible urge to roam around and cross-pollinate, something you really want in a dynamic and challenging market. The hybrid ideas are generally the strongest and the best. Teams may often appear as dead ends for individuals who want to progress up the corporate ladder. Perceived intellectual confinement diminishes their spirit and energy. High achievers learn and perform best when they move from place to place, bringing fresh perspectives to wherever they land. Growth is paramount. Mismanaged teams are anathema to these high performers. The last thing you want to do is make your racehorses restless. Focus their intense energy. Make them the dynamic energy for key teams. It is far better to lose the low performers who cannot keep up with the pace set by achievers than it is to lose your superior racehorses and always come in last behind the pack. Having discussed the importance of the high achiever on teams, let's take a look at some other issues that you need to monitor when you have teams reporting to or working for you. Planning. For a team to be successful, the members must feel they truly own the problem and have control over the solution. You must give the team adequate time to understand the problem and its ramifications and to plan its solution. The team is in control of the speed of the solution, not an unreasonable time schedule imposed from above. If you have taken the time to assemble what you feel are experts who can solve an important problem, trust them to do the job they are eminently qualified to do. If you rush them for the sake of meeting a timeline, they will only go through the motions, and paper reports will be the team's only real output as they constantly run in circles to meet deadlines. They most certainly will not solve the identified problems. They will be too busy justifying their existence. If you cannot plan ahead for the time your team needs to prepare for the solution, then it is better not to assemble the team. It will not succeed. Teams must have the freedom to tell their managers and leaders what is not possible, and you, as their leader, must have the maturity and wisdom to listen to them, and if necessary, tell your boss when something cannot be done. The astute leader knows the real risk of assembling teams. It means having the courage to give up some authority and listen to what your experts are telling you. Are you strong enough to handle a developmental challenge like this? Are you willing to give up some authority to your experts? Do you see how this team experience can grow your employees? Give the team time to plan out their work. If you start from a bad foundation, the house you build will shake with the slightest corporate breezes. Expertise. Ideally, for a team to succeed, there must be the requisite native expertise available among the team members. If not, they should be grounded in some basic level of understanding, which might take a little time to accomplish. If team members are forced to communicate from vastly different levels of understanding, they'll spend a great deal of time arguing about what things mean and explaining details to people. The learning environment can be compromised under such conditions. There must be a level of common understanding going into the team project. Choose the right people for the job. Bring them up to speed together so they can work at their best. A team that learns together will develop strong bonds. Consensus. After working on many teams and leading a number of them, I am not so sure consensus is always the best way to make team decisions. If some members don't have the same level of expertise and you don't intend to bring them up to the same level as others, then maybe the experts should make the decision about expert matters. A simple majority vote may promote a consensus of those not as skilled and jeopardize the project. Having been on several teams where projects went awry because of technical ignorance, I can truthfully say I do favor the experts making the expert decisions. In those ill-fated teams, a majority of the members just did not have the technical horsepower to make the right decisions, outvoted the experts, and the projects crashed. In one team, the project manager was technically illiterate, insisted on overruling everyone, and destroyed the team through poor leadership. It would be wonderful to think that each team member could make presentations to convince the other team members about the best way to proceed, and everything would be wonderful. Generally, teams don't work this way. They just don't have that much time available to make decisions. Management will impose deadlines they expect to be met with regularity. The talking must stop, and the work must be conducted if anyone is going to make headway. This area is difficult for team leaders to control. It takes infinite patience and a leader with excellent communication skills to break these logjams. Work at this problem. Don't let the loudmouths dominate the team's consensus atmosphere. Put an end to such behavior quickly, even if it means sometimes acting like a referee. Titles. Very often, team members with different ranks and titles will all be serving on the same team. This situation can create a de facto pecking order where there shouldn't be any. Lower-level personnel may feel intimidated and not speak up, jeopardizing the team by not contributing what might be important information. Some companies have tried to level the team playing field by giving all team members a common rank, like associate or other generic title. These ranks can be quite upsetting to some team members who have already distinguished themselves through years of hard work and have garnered recognition for their accomplishments. Such concerns can seriously hamper team performance and create animosities between more experienced and less experienced team members. The team leader must resolve these potential problems early. You should expect more from your senior, more experienced team members, and they should have the maturity to accept the roles the company has chosen for them. You need to make them understand that leaders start out as followers, and on the team, they are all starting as followers. These senior people can be a wonderful source of inspiration for the other team members. They can be the nourishment that will feed a young employee and start them on their career path. Use your senior-level people well and explain their important roles on the team, both as workers and mentors. Don't let rank and ego compromise your team mission. Professional development. Many times I have heard team members complain about losing their edge and their sense of professionalism while on a team. If they have come from a company's hands-on functional or operating unit, the team setting may seem agonizingly slow for them. They probably prefer the action of the field with the need to adapt quickly and learn on the spot. Team environments crowd their style, forcing them to roost when they would rather fly. In the field, they were respected for their technical talents, and here in the team setting, the status quo might seem too political for them. For them, growth is synonymous with action. I have known engineers who have been recycled from one team to another who burned out and left the company. They felt as though their technical and professional development was non-existent. A feeling of non-growth is a serious demotivator. Professional organizations also worry about their employees becoming unmotivated because it makes their members less likely to participate in professional activities if the company sends negative signals to the employees about the value of professional development. Try handling this situation by balancing your team members' professional development. Let them take time for formal professional courses and activities, both in the skills they will need on the team and in the areas that keep them current in the field they came from. This compromise seems to be fair, incorporating two kinds of learning and skill development. Encourage them to stay active in their professional organizations. You might also schedule some team relaxation time, where members can make presentations about their areas of technical expertise and thereby educate other team members. Some very useful cross-pollination could result from these relaxed forums. As a leader, you should also be active in a professional organization. A little example here couldn't help but be insightful to your team members. Pass on your profession's journals, newsletters, and magazines for others to glance through. Mention it when appropriate, and certainly talk about it in a positive light when the annual review comes up for your employees. Make them understand that professional growth doesn't stop when an assignment changes. Tying it all together with empowerment. This concluding section ties together much of what we have discussed into a hierarchy of leadership and trust, the ultimate foundation of employee development. Empowerment is still a powerful concept in today's workplace. It means giving the decision-making to the people who know the work the best, those that actually perform it. It also means giving them the responsibility and authority to do the work, as well as the necessary resources to make sure it gets done. For those employees who have the drive to achieve, empowerment is wonderful, but it can be intimidating at first for those not used to making decisions or who don't know how without direction. What makes an employee feel empowered? Here are 8 components necessary for the empowerment to be successful. 1. Trust. 2. Delegated authority. 3. Leadership motivation. 4. Upward communication. 5. Creative working environment. 6. Professional development. 7. Resources. And 8. Reward and recognition. Think of them arranged from bottom to top in a hierarchy, with 1 at the bottom and 8 at the top. A recurrent theme in empowerment, and one woven through this entire discussion, is leadership. You might say it is the heartbeat of empowerment. Leaders make empowerment work. They are the ones who can give life to the term through example and through their dual responsibility to teach as much as they direct. Leaders connect their employees to the world, and by doing so, point out the relevance of individual work to the goals, mission, and vision of the corporation. For empowerment to work, today's managers must change as much as the employees. It's a two-way street. The best managers are the complete managers, those having both excellent management and leadership skills in their repertoires. Following is a description of the 8 components that can make people feel empowered. 1. Trust. The most fundamental feeling an empowered employee can experience is trust. It is the bedrock on which the employee-boss relationship must be built. If it is not there, a weak foundation will result and there will be no empowerment. In fact, there won't be anything. Trusted employees know they can act independently without a nervous Nelly constantly looking over their shoulders or without having to work under the stress of constantly being second-guessed. Chances are that when trusted, employees return the gesture in kind and trust their bosses. In actuality, with a component of trust, employees begin to see their bosses not just as managers, but also as leaders, generating the cohesiveness of groups or teams. People who are trusted are not likely to betray that trust. Most will go out of their way to show that they are deserving of it. Too often, in our attempts to force corporate re-engineering through right-sizing and other leaning exercises, we have destroyed the basic trust people have in their managers and leaders. We cannot be competitive in world markets if we don't trust each other at the most basic levels. It can take years to rebuild lost trust. It is as fragile as glass and as indispensable as any material resource. Trust is the foundation of empowerment. Trust comes in many more different forms than just the normal way we usually think of it. Trust is allowing employees to roam around the company to get information and to talk with people. Trust is listening to what an employee's work has disclosed or their critical commentary about the way something is being done. Trust is letting the employee make presentations to upper management or managing the department in your absence. Trust is letting the employee manage a project the way they feel most comfortable, allowing them to call the shots, be responsible for the outcomes, and take credit for the benefits accrued. In an old-fashioned way, trust is nothing more than making sure you treat your employees the way you would want to be treated. Step out of your shoes and ask, "Would I tolerate being treated this way?" Chances are, if you would not be comfortable with the treatment you are imposing on them, neither would your employees feel very comfortable or trusted. The golden rule works quite well with the topic of trust. 2. Delegated authority. Responsibility should go along with authority. We have all heard about delegation before. In fact, many of us have probably uttered these words ourselves when talking with our bosses or perhaps complaining to our peers about a certain project. Ideally, responsibility and authority should go hand in hand. Unfortunately, it's not always the case. This situation is often the cause for much grumbling and griping among project managers and sponsors, and rightly so. In a truly empowered environment, the knowledgeable employees are in the best positions to make the most efficient decisions. Coupled with trust, delegated authority is a powerful motivator and developing agent for employees. It's another lesson taken from life's experiences. If you are responsible for something, you will generally take better care of it than if you were not responsible for it. After all, isn't that the reason why we give our children allowances? To make them responsible for their financial investments and expenditures? Do we not couple trust in their judgments with the corresponding responsibility to be accountable for the outcome of their expenditures? Why should it be any different on the job? Trust and authority to make decisions and be subsequently responsible for those decisions seems rather fundamental in an empowered environment. Perhaps the problem resides with the manager not wanting to let go of the authority and share it with others. Perhaps it is seen as a loss of power? Actually, it is not, but rather a conversion of power from one of management to leadership. Power transformed. It's a lot like being a parent. In the early formative years, you manage your children. In the adolescent and young adult years, your most effective tools come from your leadership skills. Teaching by example. Your power comes from your reputation and record of accomplishment, not your position as the parent. It's not much different in an organization, and it dovetails nicely with the next step on the empowerment pyramid, leadership motivation. 3. Leadership motivation. If you have ever worked for a real leader, you never quite forget the experience. That individual takes on an almost charismatic persona, motivating people to want to do things, even without asking. This scenario is the empowered environment in action. People don't get told what to do. They watch and learn by example, and then act when it becomes appropriate. In times of great change and redefinition, as we are experiencing in our business world today, leaders are very valuable people to have. They are the visionaries who set the company's long-term mission. They point to the future like a weather vane, explaining why they are seeing what they see. They educate and convince as much as they work. They are the ones who connect their people to the rest of the corporation and the world. leaders link their employees to the rich information network they will need to tap to unleash the pent-up creativity that good professionals want so desperately to demonstrate. They are the Team USA coaches. They are the counselors, the pseudo-parents of everyone on the team. They inspire people to act. They are the motivators. They spot the opportunities and direct their people to them. In the empowered environment or team or department or company, all employees are members of the cast, as Walt Disney said, even the director and producer. There isn't any reason for the directors or producers to flaunt their power and prestige. Everybody already knows who they are. They are the leaders precisely because everyone recognizes their achievements and agrees that is what they want to aspire to. That is the crucial difference between management and leadership. Those from above select managers. Leaders are chosen from those being led. In the best of all worlds, it's the same person, the complete manager. When it is not the same person, upper management and employees are out of step. Something is wrong. Motivation will be seriously affected. Leaders are the glue for any organization. They are the motivation engines in an empowered working environment. 4. Upward communication. Empowered people like to know they have the ear of the people in the organization, ideally those in key decision-making areas. It is natural for employees to want to have input into the very workings of the company. That is why we are all here, is it not? To exchange ideas and comments in a constructive manner. Being able to interact with and communicate with upper-level company executives is a powerful stimulant for motivation. During changing times, so much can be learned by watching and interfacing with company leaders and observing how things happen. Providing input, comments, and feedback to this process is exhilarating to knowledge workers. They feel they are truly part of the big picture. Once again, we encounter the leadership connection here. Manager leaders make this connection to a company's upper levels and places their people into vital company positions. The trick is to make the large corporation retain the down-home flavor, whereby access and communication with upper-level executives is both encouraged and also seen as a grooming ground for tomorrow's new leaders. What department leaders do for their staff must be done in kind by upper-level leaders as well. It should be part of a corporate-wide mentoring and educational process. Think of the incredible feelings you've probably experienced when a vice president asked you to do a special project. You probably felt motivated and energized as you were able to have access to new information and work with it. Well, why not have this happen all the time? Think of the necessity of this work structure and philosophy in the information age. Those companies that can communicate the most efficiently within their own organization will probably enjoy a tremendous advantage. Almost 75% of all new product failures can be traced to poor interdepartmental communications. What a company knows will be as important as what it owns. Information is valuable, but only when the communication channels are available and receptive for spreading word around the company and making competitive advantage out of it. In an empowered environment, upward communication is essential for spreading the word. Without it, local or department leaders cannot connect their people to a vision, and motivation will suffer when employees cannot see their work connecting to the big picture. 5. Creative working environment. Jobs are not inherently creative. To varying degrees, each job presents opportunities for creativity, but humans make up the creative elements. How successful anyone may be is a direct function of the environment in which they are allowed to operate. People are creative when they know it is okay to try things their way. Managers welcome and encourage rather than frown upon new ideas. They have both the responsibility and authority for their work. Their superiors are more positive than negative in their comments. Channels of communication are wide open. They are respected for their skills and talents with opportunities to grow, and they are recognized and rewarded for their achievements. It doesn't sound like too much to ask for, does it? It doesn't cost much in salary additions. In fact, salary is seldom the issue in creativity. People prefer being trusted to do a good job. Most of the time, all they really want is some good soil in which to grow. They will usually be content to earn their way from there. But the soil is important. Ask any farmer. Good seeds in bad soil are a tragedy. It's worse than bad seeds in good soil. This issue often separates the great companies from the good companies. Corporate soil must be rich and well-managed. It must nurture the creative employees so they can grow up to become tomorrow's leaders. Creativity is an art form. It needs room to express itself. The empowered organization knows that the workplace of the future will look more like a university than today's traditional offices. We associate creativity with our educational institutions. We need to welcome creativity into the workplace. Creative employees can turn ideas into competitive advantage if they have the right nutrients and encouragement in their soil. 6. Professional development. All professionals want to grow and learn new things. Ideally, the empowered working environment is exactly the place to do just that. Professional development comes in different forms. Technical or specialty growth in the employee's field of expertise or in new specialties. Managerial growth for the development of management and leadership skills. Cross-disciplinary training for job expansion and broadening. Professional society participation for developing industry-related contacts and network building. And special assignments or team assignments for departmental or corporate problem solving. All of these potential growth experiences are important for empowered people since they reinforce their personal goals as well as validate their positions as a valuable part of their corporate teams. In the information age, where information and knowledge will rule supreme, we will need to pay even more attention to continuing education. Knowledge equals competitive advantage. The empowered workplace, as discussed earlier, may very well resemble a modern university-like environment, where education and learning takes place all the time. The leaders in such a wonderful work experience will teach as much as they work with their subordinates and peers. To maintain a high level of motivation, the workplace must be a growth experience for all employees. 7. Resources. Having the resources to do the job makes all the difference in the world. Ask any mechanic. With the right tools, any job can be done easily and correctly. Resources are nothing more than the right tools. The empowered work environment authorizes people to get the job done, make the necessary decisions, and take responsibility. These properties are powerful stuff for all employees, but must be backed up with the tools or resources to do the job. These resources come in several forms: funds and authorized monies, people who understand their roles and responsibilities, a communication network to other departments, and outside contacts for assistance and additional resources. Without real resources to validate one's ideas and concepts and transform them into reality, empowerment becomes nothing more than hollow platitudes. Empowerment plus resources equals action. 8. Reward and recognition. The final result of any good work effort should be reward and recognition for the individuals who performed the work. Time and again, studies have shown that money is not necessarily the only or best way to provide reward and recognition, especially for knowledge workers. These people tend to be highly driven by personal achievement. There are many ways to reward and recognize people for their achievements in an empowered work environment, even during times when financial rewards are limited by tight corporate budgets. Change in title, status, responsibilities, broadened work duties, greater job latitude and freedom, compensatory days off, taking an extra course or educational experience, covering for the boss when they are not available, assignment of increased staff and resources, going to conferences to bring back new information, and starting a new project. Various other techniques for recognition include awarding plaques for display, special certificates, and perhaps an article in the company newspaper. As we empower employees, it can be easy to forget that recognition and reward for a job well done is the icing on the cake. Often it costs relatively little to acknowledge an outstanding effort. It does set an excellent example for others to strive for the recognition. Some of the best sports coaches can teach us quite a bit about how reward and recognition promote empowered environments. As sports plays unfold, the athletes know what has to be done, and they take the steps to do the right things. We want that kind of reaction in the workplace, with the leaders acting as the coaches, recognizing good, solid, and consistent performance. These are the 8 basic components of empowerment, with trust and leadership forming the foundation and acting as the glue for the whole structure. Without empowerment, quality programs lack the vigor and commitment of employee buy-in. People can own problems and solve them when they are empowered to do so. Leaders stimulate empowerment. If you want employees to be empowered, there must be a quid pro quo agreement. You must give them the authority, tools, and resources to do the job. Would you accept such a challenge without the proper equipment? Walk the talk. About the author. Harry T. Roman holds 12 U.S. patents, received numerous engineering, invention, and teaching awards, and has published over 550 scientific papers, articles, monographs, and books. In 1999, the New Jersey Technology Education and Engineering Association named him a Distinguished Technology Educator. In 2005, the New Jersey Inventors Hall of Fame honored Roman with an Inventor of the Year Award for his application of mobile robots in hazardous work environments. In 1996, IEEE honored him with a Meritorious Achievement Award for developing continuing education products for IEEE members. Again in 2006, IEEE honored Roman with an Outstanding Engineer Award. Every month, more than 65,000 educators read his feature articles appearing in various national publications. In PSE&G's R&D group, where Roman worked for 36 years, he directed and consulted on more than $100 million worth of projects and programs. He also taught graduate-level R&D project management courses at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, NJIT. Throughout his engineering career, Roman worked with schools around the state, bringing the excitement of real-world problem-solving into the classroom. Retired since 2006, he has published more than 70 resource books, math card games, and science kits for teachers, products valued for their head-and-hands approach to teaching creativity, invention, STEM, engineering, and alternate energy topics in the classroom. Roman now spends many hours in the classroom working with teachers and students in West Orange, Montclair, and Livingston, conducting special student project team challenges. He is an advisor and author to the Edison Innovation Foundation and a docent and special lecturer at the Thomas Edison National Historical Park in West Orange. Roman also admits to writing and publishing poetry and short stories. This has been Developing Your People, Common Sense Leadership in the Workplace, Volume 3, Career Asset Management, Teamwork, and Empowerment, written by Harry T. Roman, narrated by Kat Lukabaugh.